May it please the court, I'm Gary Elkins here on behalf of White House Hotel Limited Partnership, along with co-counsel Yvonne Chalker, and we're joined at council table by Elizabeth Merritt, Deputy General Counsel of the National Trust, who filed the amicus brief in this action.
Proceed, please.
Treasury Regulation 1.178-14H provides that the amount of a deduction in the case of a charitable contribution of a facade donation that covers a portion of contiguous property owned by the donor is the difference between the fair market value of the entire contiguous parcel of property before and after the granting of the restriction. The tax court erred in this case as a matter of law in failing to apply the applicable Treasury regulations to both the facts and the court's valuation analysis, thereby subjecting this case to what we believe is an appropriate de novo review by this court. Although counsel for the commissioner in this case may characterize it as one involving a credibility assessment by the trial court, in reality, the case involves the acceptance and the substantial adoption by the trial judge of valuation opinions of the government's proffered expert, which fail to comply with the standards of his profession, which are replete with substantive and material deficiencies, and which were admitted over timely objections by taxpayer counsel. The most glaring error of law in this case was the government's expert's failure to be aware of, to apply, and to be more specific, his failure to even read the applicable Treasury regulations of his own client that apply to the appropriate appraisal methodology to be applied when valuing conservation contributions. And the trial judge, against this foundation, compounded and perpetuated that error by the appraiser by similarly failing to apply the Treasury regulations to the court's own valuation analysis.
And specifically, that's he failed to use the highest best use formulation?
Actually, he failed to actually make a determination as to the appropriate piece of property, Your Honor. It is taxpayers' position that the appropriate property is all of the property that is affected by the donation.
How about the fact that the easement did not include the Cress building? I think that's correct. I may be wrong. It did not include one or the other.
Right.
The Maison Blanche and the Cress. I think it did not include the Cress. In other words, the argument, and this is the one thing that I sure would like both sides to comment on. There is an assumption here that your clients may be making, and that is that both of these buildings would be in the future sold together because of the easement, the effect of the easement. Is that an assumption that we should accept? And therefore, because the buildings could be separated, whether the evaluation by the tax court was proper?
Your Honor, in response to that, let me give you...
Let's go to the first point. Does the easement cover both buildings?
The easement affects both buildings.
Does it burden both buildings?
In effect, as a matter of law, yes.
Okay, but it is clear that the easement does not talk about the Crest building. Is that correct?
That was stipulated at trial.
Okay, now, would you tell me Louisiana law that says that it burdens both buildings? How do you get to that point?
Your Honor, that's a false premise.
Okay.
It is a false premise that the donation must burden both buildings. The correct statement of law and the correct law in this court, in the Fifth Circuit, in cases involving partial taking, is that the valuation determination looks to all contiguous property under common ownership, common use, common highest and best use.
And you're saying that at the time of the transfer, there was common ownership of both properties?
Yes, there was, clearly. It might be helpful, Your Honor, to give a very simplistic example. If this court were presented with a partial taking in the condemnation context of two contiguous parcels, Blackacre and Whiteacre, and Blackacre is a hotel and Whiteacre is an adjacent parking garage,
sure,
owned by the same parties, operated together. If the parking garage is taken, the parking garage is the only property described in the condemnation proceeding. Mm-hmm. Condemnation proceeding does not describe the adjacent parcel of the hotel, just like the donation in this case does not describe the adjacent parcel of Chris. Mm. But the valuation exercise determines the effect of that taking on the adjacent contiguous parcel, and it is only logical to assume that a hotel, which has been severed from its parking lot, has been affected for valuation purposes. That's the larger parcel approach to or methodology to valuation that the Fifth Circuit uses in condemnation cases, and it is exactly that methodology that was adopted as a matter of regulatory procedure for the very analogous valuation of facade donations or conservation easements. In this case, what is missing from the opinion is the extensive record that was presented at trial as to the physical and operational integration of these two buildings that existed at the time of the donation. Mr. Drawbridge, speaking on behalf of the Tax Matters partner, testified that all of the HVAC and mechanical systems for the Maison Blanche building, for the first three floors, that are all the public areas, the ballrooms, the reception area, the restaurants, the motor entrance, are contained in the Crest building. He further testified that there are hotel rooms in the Crest building. He testified that if one wants to check into the Ritz-Carlton, one walks through the former wall between the Maison Blanche building into the Crest building to the registration desk. The back of the house, the general manager's offices, the meeting rooms are in the Crest building. And all of those plans were in place at the time that the donation was made in December of 1997. And those plans were approved by the donee, and those plans were attached as an exhibit to the donation. So clearly, had the Treasury regulations been applied, one would look at the contiguous parcels with unity of ownership, unity of operation. In fact, they were architecturally inextricably tied together. Mr. Stagner, who testified at trial as an experienced consultant for Ritz-Carlton, testified that this property, which at the time was subject to a 20-year operating agreement, which was recorded in the public records in advance of the donation, that this property could not qualify and meet its obligations as a Ritz-Carlton in the absence of a porte-cochere or a drive-up motor entrance, and that the only way that it met that requirement for its 20-year operating agreement was by incorporation of the Crest building into the Maison Blanche building as a unitary hotel development. Now, what was stipulated at trial is also that on the date of the donation, December 29th, 1997, there was already agreed to a condominium declaration, which was recorded the very next day, that was already in place to not only recognize the physical and architectural tie-in of these two buildings, but as a matter of Louisiana law, to reestablish these two buildings as a single parcel of real property. And that agreement existed as of the donation date and was recorded the following day.
Now, I want to make sure that I'm correct. The hotel was already built, but the condominiums had not yet been built. Is that correct?
No, Your Honor.
What's the sequence? I'm sorry.
The hotel actually was about to start construction.
Okay, great.
The building had been acquired and had been in the developmental phase. And at the point where the donation was made, the owners, the White House Hotel Limited Partnership, had obtained construction financing, had plans and specifications for construction, had an operating agreement with the Ritz-Carlton, had obtained zoning waivers permitting the intended construction.
Everything was ready except for the actual construction and the facade donation.
That's correct. And because of other provisions in the applicable Treasury regulations, it was necessary in order to comply with the facade donation regs that the facade donation actually be recorded in order to prime the construction mortgage. So the chronology, the legal chronology as mandated by the Treasury regs was you do the donation, you burden the property so that these perpetual real rights will prime the first mortgage lender. And as a matter of convenience, it was also done chronologically the day before recordation of the condominium.
Well, the construction you're talking about of the condominiums, that's only on the Maison Blanche building, right?
The unit RC in the condominium declaration, Judge Dennis, consisted of the Maison Blanche building together with the Crest building. So unit RC was the combination of both buildings.
And RC was
Benefit
Ridge Carlton.
I asked you about the construction on top of the buildings, the condominiums.
No, Your Honor.
Built only on top of the Maison Blanche building, right?
No, Your Honor.
No?
There were multiple hotels built on the site. There's an Iberville Suites Hotel, for instance, on the back on Iberville. The Iberville Suites Hotel in its entirety was one condominium unit. The Ritz-Carlton Hotel, consisting of the former Maison Blanche building and the Crest building, was in its entirety one huge condominium
but
unit.
But the restriction does not affect, or it does not directly or explicitly refer to these additional 60 rooms that you say you can't construct because of the restriction.
The facade donation contains specific obligations going forward. The general provisions of the facade donation grant an open space and scenic easement to the Preservation Resource Center to preserve the public's visual access to all of the exterior facades of the building.
Even though one of them is a plain brick wall.
Even though one of them is a plain brick wall.
With no terracotta on it.
With no terracotta on it. And that was clearly labeled and shown in the plans, that there could not be additional upward construction that would...
Well, that's what bothers me about this. You knew all that going in. You knew what you were doing to yourself. You were limiting yourself. You must not have thought it was worth anything.
Well, Judge, the importance theoretically of facade donations is that it's not just this owner, it's any owner in perpetuity. And so what's happening is that this property is burdened 100 years from now from upward development on the adjacent parcel. In fact, that adjacent parcel now is the same parcel. And what's very important as a matter of Louisiana law, which was raised in our brief, is this facade donation is a contract. It's a contract between the donor and the donee.
But what's it worth? I mean, how hard would it be? How much would it cost to undo that? You wouldn't be undoing any terracotta.
Well, that's a very interesting, that's a very good question. How much would it cost to undo that? In the event of a judicial termination of this facade donation, the contract provides that the value of this servitude to the PRC is 10% of the value of the building.
That's if it's foreclosed on or something like that. Huh?
If it's foreclosed on or if it were to be burned down, there's a requirement to ensure that
interest. No, what I'm talking about, if you went to the preservation people and said, look, we gave you a facade, but, you know, there's no terracotta on the side. It will enhance all of this property if we can get that released and go ahead and build on top of the Crest building or whatever you want to do. What I'm getting at is, how much would it really take to do that? It looks to me like that is not a big deal.
There was testimony at trial on behalf of the donor and the donee that was not permitted and that was their agreement and that there was no expectation that would occur. And what, in effect, the tax court did was collaterally attack a Louisiana contract. In Louisiana, Judge Dennis, you know that the interpretation of contract is to determine the common intent of the parties. The common intent of the parties was expressed in this case. The judge in the record acknowledged that it was undisputed, yet the judge abrogated the contract between these two parties.
Thank you very much.
Good morning, Your Honor.
Ms. Hauser?
Excuse me. My name is Bethany Hauser for the Commissioner of Internal Revenue. This is a case about a taxpayer, a partnership that invested in real estate in New Orleans. They put down an amount that the tax court estimated generously at approximately $11 million to aggregate this parcel. And 2 years after they began aggregating the parcel, they claimed a deduction of $7.5 million for conservation easement on the parcel. In between, they developed the plan for a hotel, and then they donated a conservation easement that was consistent with their plan for the hotel. The commissioner has never disputed that this was a valuable historical property and that they're entitled to a deduction and that they're entitled to a deduction of over $1 million. And now we do not dispute that they're entitled to the deduction allowed them by the tax court, which is nearly $2 million. The question, the taxpayers here are simply seeking to increase that deduction back to the $7.5 million that they initially claimed. And most of the additional value that they seek is, as the court clearly already perceives, from the 60 additional hotel rooms that they claim they could have built on top of the Crest building had they not made this donation in this manner. As the tax court explained, the problem with that approach is that the Crest building was, on the date of the donation, a separate parcel of land. It's not described in the easement. And so it could have been sold to a bona fide purchaser without notice on that date who would not have been bound by the easement. Now, I understand there's some contract between the taxpayer and the PRC, and the taxpayer might have been personally liable in Louisiana court for violation of that contract, but it wouldn't change the value of the piece of real estate.
Why not? I mean, as I understand the argument is that separate parcel, the Crest building, was burdened by this easement, and therefore we should look at it as a contiguous parcel. I think that's what their argument is. Your argument is that these were two separate parcels, and
yes, I want to make sure that we distinguish between two arguments.
Okay.
Under the Treasury regulation, when you're doing evaluation, you need to look at all the contiguous parcels. These are separate legal parcels on the date of donation, but the Crest building, the Maison Blanche building, and the contiguous parking garages are all contiguous parcels owned by the same owners.
Right.
And so for valuation purposes, you need to take into account all of those contiguous parcels and indeed all the parcels in the area. And that's for the obvious reason. If you put a donation, an open space donation over, say, a park area, but you built homes all around the park area, then the area of the park might, the value of the park area might go down, but the value of the homes might go up enough to counteract it. In fact, that's mm-hmm. one very good reason someone might do it. So that's why the regulation is written that way.
Did the court do that?
The court did not do that. None of the experts did that. None of the experts took into account all of the different related parcels that were held by the same taxpayers. And so the court did not have evidence to work with to deal with all of the different parcels.
Well, if that's the case, do we send it back already? I mean, have you just conceded that the valuation was incorrect according to the Treasury regulation?
Well, the taxpayer, since it's a deduction case,
yes, no,
the taxpayer has the burden to come forward with the with credible evidence on each part, and there's just no evidence at all about the effect of this on the contiguous parcels. I think what you could say is that the tax court decided that the effect on the less on the parking garages was less significant and could be disregarded in the interest of coming to an answer.
I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
I'm sorry.
Speak up, please.
Certainly. What I was saying was that I think you could decide that the tax court, not being presented with any evidence about the effect of these donations on the parking garages, could decide that the effect was effectively negligible and could be disregarded for the purpose of coming to an answer in this case. As to the argument that the taxpayer has made that the Crest building and the Maison Blanche building were later integrated into a complete, into a single functioning hotel that would make it impossible to sell one parcel separately from the other. That certainly might be true if an easement were donated
today.
May I
ask you to speak a little more slowly, because
yes,
we record this and we have to listen to it later. And I will enjoy listening to it, but I would enjoy it more if you would speak a little more slowly.
I'm sorry. With regard to
you're down south here now. Let's just so long.
I know. I go to New York. They ask me to talk faster. So, all I was saying was that with regard to the argument that the Crest building and the Maison Blanche building ultimately became integrated in the Ritz-Carlton Hotel in a way that they could not practically be separated and sold separately, that argument would be compelling if the donation easement, if the easement had been donated today. But
after the fact,
after the construction. But on the date of the donation, they were simply planning to make those changes.
Well, but doesn't the fact that you're planning to do this, and that this is, not to make a pun, part and parcel of the whole overall scheme, where you're thinking, all right, we're going to have this, we're going to have that, we're going to donate this easement, that's going to give us a tax benefit that will assist in us being able to fulfill these plans, and then years later when the matter's before the tax court and it's obvious that all of this was done, why can't that be considered?
I think the objection is that it would have been simple to burden the Crest building explicitly in the easement.
Well, as I understand opposing counsel, and he is saying that chronologically, mm-hmm, this is the way it had to have happened. You burden, you make the easement, and therefore, when you start getting finance, everybody knows that that property is now affected by that easement.
Right. And that's the reason to do the easement before the construction mortgage.
Right.
But that's not a reason to leave the Crest building out of the easement.
So what you're saying is that they could have included the Crest building in the easement, which they failed to do, and therefore the valuation has to be separated from the Crest building.
The only effect on the valuation is that the additional hotel rooms that might have been built...
The 60...
Yes, that we don't take into account these additional theoretical hotel rooms that they could have planned to build. There was no easement when they were coming up with the plan. And then decided not to plan to build and now are claiming millions of dollars in deductions based on not building these hotel rooms that they had already decided not to build, on top of a building that was not burdened that would have obstructed a view of a plain brick wall and also would have left more of the rooms in the Maison Blanche building proper with views simply into a light well as opposed to...
When did this... tax reg about donating easements. When was the first year that was adopted?
I couldn't tell you off the top of my head. I'm sorry.
I mean, it's a fairly new creature?
No, it's not. It's been in place for a while. In fact, there's a 2006 amendment to the statute that would make this donation not deductible at all because of the construction of a penthouse on the roof.
Do the regulations adopt condemnation rules that would affect this case?
I'm sorry?
Your opponent said that the regulations he was talking about that weren't followed allow condemnation theories to be applied so that the Crest, the effect upon the Crest building, although it wasn't explicitly mentioned in the donation, it would, according to these rules, be diminished in value.
Again, the effect on the Crest building is relevant in terms of how, insofar as the donation of an easement on the Maison Blanche building affects the value of the Crest building. For example, you might say that being a small building located next to a large, important historic New Orleans landmark, just being located next to that building increases the value of the Crest building. And so perhaps the existence of an easement increases the value of the Crest building. because it increases the likelihood that the Crest building will stay there.
In other words, if it were a separate piece of property, theoretically, they could have built 60 more rooms on top.
Right.
But along comes the donation, and that is although that property is not included in the donation, he is arguing that there's something in these regulations that allow the taxpayer to recover money or a refund.
What's in the regulations would allow the amount of the deduction to be adjusted up or down, depending on the effect of the regulation of the easement, on the Crest building, on an unburdened but related parcel.
Right.
Right. So, like in the subdivision example, the effect, even if the easement is only on the park in the middle of the subdivision, if it has a
right, I mean,
effect on the home.
What's your rebuttal argument to that?
Is the way the regulation works. What it doesn't do here is permit the deduction to be increased by the value of the 60 hotel rooms, because nothing about the easement prevented the building of those 60 hotel rooms. But that doesn't mean you can't take the effect of an easement on the Maison Blanche building on the value of the Crest building into account in determining the size of the entire deduction.
Well, that's an interesting statement. Nothing but the easement prevented the building of the 60 hotel rooms. But the flip side of that is you seem to be agreeing that because of the easement, the 60 hotel rooms can't be built, therefore there's a diminution in value for the overall contiguous property.
No, Your Honor. I'm clearly not expressing myself clearly.
We just didn't have enough coffee this morning. Try that again, okay?
Let me try one more time. The easement doesn't, it's the government's position that the easement does not burden the Crest building, and therefore the easement does not prevent the building of additional stories on top of the Crest building. Okay? But when determining the size of the donation, of the deduction, the regulation asks the courts to look at the effect of the donation, and this would just be a donation on the Maison Blanche building, on all the contiguous and indeed neighboring pieces of property that are owned by the same taxpayer.
So what you're saying is, yes, there is a donation here that has an effect and could be a deduction, but no, the 60 hotel rooms are not considered in the fair market value of that donation.
Right. In fact, it could increase rather than decrease the value of the Crest building.
I must have had some good coffee this morning.
Yes, sir. In fact, it could increase rather than decrease the value of the Crest building, as I was saying, because just being located next to the Maison Blanche building might have that effect.
Ms. Hauser, how about I understand your argument, but the opposing argument is this legal argument that it was in fact burdened. Although not included in the easement, it was by Louisiana law burdened by this contribution. And we haven't talked about Louisiana law at all in this thing, and I presume that is the law that either creates a burden or not. We got to look at state law, it seems to me. Fundamental tax, you got to go to state property rights.
Right.
So tell me about that.
What my understanding on that point is that the tax court's concern was, what if the Crest building were sold on the date of donation, because that's when the valuation was made, to a bona fide purchaser without notice of this easement? And the tax court asked counsel for the taxpayer whether that bona fide purchaser would be able to find any notice in the land records of the Crest building, of any burden on the Crest building. And the answer was, well, no, it wouldn't be in the records for the Crest building. You would have to go and see that the Crest building had at one time been under common ownership with the Maison Blanche building, then see the easement on the Maison Blanche building.
Where would we find that again? Where is that in the record, that testimony?
I'm sure it's cited in our brief. I can't give you the cite off the top of my head, but I'd be happy to send a letter.
You said it was in whose testimony?
It was a question that, rather than testimony, it was a direct question from the tax court to counsel for the taxpayer.
Okay.
Yes, and I would be happy to provide the court with a letter with that citation.
Would you please?
Yes.
And what are you going to say in that letter?
Just the record, the citation.
Just the citation to the record.
On which particular point?
On the question asked by the tax court about the effect of Louisiana law, the effect of the easement on the Crest Building under Louisiana law, as explained to the tax court by counsel for the taxpayer.
Very good. Doing quite well, slowing down. Yeah.
Thank you.
That's it, isn't it?
No,
I want to ask you a question. I want to ask you a question about this gross under-reporting penalty and about the tax court. I suppose allowed Mr. Drawbridge's testimony, but didn't give it the effect that taxpayers desired. Now, when Mr. Drawbridge testified, was he simply a conduit to offer evidence of letters, correspondence between taxpayers and their consultant, between taxpayers and their lawyer, et cetera, et cetera?
My understanding is that he was testifying about events that had happened before he was associated with the taxpayer.
Yes, but did he offer documentary evidence about that?
No.
In other words, he was offering his understanding.
I mean, there are some. He was offering his understanding about what had happened. There are some documents in the record. There's the REVAC appraisal.
There's a what?
There's a REVAC appraisal in the record that was introduced for this purpose. So there are some documents in the record.
But did he offer, for example, a letter from counsel, an opinion letter from counsel, saying, I think that this report is sufficient basis for claiming this deduction?
I don't believe so, no.
So you're, in essence, that claim is that he's incompetent to testify to events that occurred before he became whatever office he had afterwards.
That's what the tax court found.
Okay. That is not a claim, however, that he could not certify certain records of the corporation, which you're
records
not claiming that. Okay.
But the tax court went to, as you said. If there are no other questions.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Elkins, let's start with that. Not the very, very last point, but the Louisiana law and how that affects the burden on the Crest Building, please. And specifically the citation to the record and the attorney who gave that.
That is an accurate statement by Ms. Hauser. Judge Halpern did say, if I go to the public record, is there any document in the public record that physically gives the description of the Crest Building and gives notice to third parties? And the answer to that was no. It gets us back to the first point that I made in argument, however, Your Honor, and I'd like to ask you to focus very clearly on two verbs, burdened and affected. The error that the tax court made was they said that the Crest Building was not burdened by the facade donation because its property description, this very question that you're pursuing, was not in the public record. What the Treasury regulations say, what the larger parcel expropriation cases of the Fifth Circuit say, is you look, just like the example I gave you, was the hotel that was severed from the parking garage and the condemnation burdened by the condemnation? The answer is no. Was it affected as a matter of value? That is the issue. Not was it burdened, was it affected as a matter of value. Now, the undertakings in the facade donation included an obligation on the part of the donor, quote, to do no thing, close quote, nor to permit the doing of anything that would result in obscuring the view of the exterior facades. Now, under Civil Code Article, we're going to talk about state law for just a minute, Civil Code Article 1756, an obligation is a legal relationship whereby a person is bound to render performance in favor of another person, the donor to the donee. And that performance may consist of the doing, the giving or not doing. There was an obligation not to do. Now, Professor Litvinov, the late Saul Litvinov, wrote in his civil law treatise, an obligation not to do is, quote, one where the obligor, in this case the donor, binds himself to abstain from undertaking a certain course of action. And then, interestingly, Professor Litvinov says, as an example, thus, when a person binds himself not to build on his land a building taller than a certain height, or not to use his property for a certain purpose, the resulting obligation is one not to do. At page 403 of the record, continuing on to 404, in another colloquy between myself and Judge Halpern, I stated, the clear testimony to you by both parties to this contract is that both contracting parties understand this agreement to restrict any right with respect to the Crest Building. There's no evidence to the contrary, to which Judge Halpern responded, that's uncontradicted.
Okay, let me make sure that I understand. What you're saying is that although the easement did not contain the Crest Building and it was not burdened in that way, the effect of the easement was to lower the value of the Crest Building, and therefore that building had to, the 60 hotel rooms had to be taken into account.
To restrict the right of that owner to do or not to do. And that is the express language in the donation document, and that was the express uncontradicted testimony of both parties to the contract. So in Louisiana, where you're interpretation of the contract is to find the common intent and will of the parties. Mm-hmm. The tax court had that in this case.
What about the? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to ask you to address the government's contention where she almost, as Judge Garza asked her, are you conceding error here? She urges the problem was that you simply failed to offer the proper proof about the effect on the contiguous property.
That is actually a misstatement. What happened in the record, and I'll be happy to cite you to the transcript later, Your Honor, if you so please. Judge Halpern asked Mr. Roderick on this very issue, Mr. Roderick, why didn't you appraise the parking garage? That's in the record. And Mr. Roderick said, I didn't appraise the parking garage because it was already built to its highest height and density. There was no differential. It would have been a net zero on both sides of the before and after equation. So the evidence in the record, the only evidence in the record, is Mr. Roderick's valuation on a before and after method of the contiguous parcels. And it is true that he didn't add in X value for the parking garage on both sides of the equation, but the differential would be the same.
Whoa, stop. If that's the case, then hasn't Roderick conceded in effect that the easement does not have an effect on that parking area? In other words, if he's going to value the parking area, I guess in the Crest Building, right?
No, three different buildings, Your Honor.
Okay.
Three different buildings.
If he's going to value that at zero, that is, it's the same before the donation, same after, hasn't he conceded that there is no effect on valuation?
No, Your Honor. For example, if you have a four-story building that, for zoning purposes, the floor area ratio is 4, what that means is you can build 4 stories and nothing more. In the case of the parking garage, we had 3 different buildings, the Crest Building, the Maison Blanche Building, and a parking garage.
Okay.
Mr. Roderick's testimony was the parking garage had no additional development rights, that even absent the donation, it was built to its highest height and density permissible. So it was a zero factor in valuation, whereas the Crest Building
could be
built 60 additional rooms. The specific zoning that was applied for allowed for the construction of 780 rooms on this site. 720 rooms were constructed. Judge Barksdale, if I could just refer to
Mr.
your
Elkins,
question.
Your time is finished. Go ahead and answer
quickly.
Your question with respect to Drawbridge. Mr. Drawbridge was a representative of the Tax Matters Partner, which is an entity which can only speak through a designated witness, and we've cited in our brief why it is appropriate for him as a representative of the entity to deliver information, including that related to the REVAC appraisal, which separately established the value.
I understand that, but it's one thing for him to just say, this is what I understand happened. It's another for him to have offered documents as simply a conduit. And we'll see that in the record.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. We will stand in recess.